Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Dave P. from San Diego.
My name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 21st, 1986. And before I get started, I want to thank Randy and Al for having me here tonight. This is really cool. I love doing this. I want to welcome the new people and congratulate the birthday person. 1 year is a long time to stay sober. And if you're new, this is a fantastic meeting to get involved in. I've had the honor and privilege of speaking at a lot of different meetings, and this is an exciting meeting to get involved in. And I got to watch it from the very beginning, and it's just exciting. The first time I was asked to do this, I was about 7 years sober. And I said I was nervous. And some new person yelled out, "Relax, we're alcoholics. You ain't going to impress us." That's been my saving grace in Alcoholics Anonymous. All I got to do is tell the truth. And that is all I have to do. Now, sometimes my truth does not look very pretty because I'm a human being and I make mistakes, and I'm definitely not a saint. I made a lot of mistakes in sobriety. And if you're new, you can make a lot of mistakes in sobriety and learn from them. The key is not to justify your mistakes, or my mistakes, rather. When I start to rationalize and justify my mistakes in sobriety, I pay the price dearly for it. I want to tell a before and after story. This guy was really old. Really old. He was 78. He was really old, and he was out drinking with his buddy. And he called his wife up. Now, they got married and whatever. They were married for 60 years. And he calls up his wife, and he says, "Honey, I'm going to be home in a few minutes." And his wife says, "Of whom am I speaking to?" Now, he gets sober, and he's sober about 10 years, and he's all dressed up, and he's watching his wife get dolled up for his 10th anniversary, and he says, "Honey, this AA stuff rips. We're really good. God is really good to me. You know, I get up in the middle of the night, and God turns on the light for me when I'm using the restroom." And the wife looks at him dumbfounded, and he says, "You old fool, you done squirted in the refrigerator again." I've been sober 22 years, and it's been absolutely fantastic. I've had a lot of experience being sober for 22 years. One of the greatest joys I have is watching new people come in here, dragging their knuckles, acting like animals, and you watch them to progress to civilized human beings, men and women. And it's been amazing to watch that throughout the years and to be a part of it. I was born and raised in Vero Beach, Florida. I come from a family. My dad was a square. He built airplanes for a living. He showed up to work when he was supposed to. There was never any abuse or anything like that. My mom was a waitress, very talented woman, very pretty, very vivacious, and she was a good drinker. Everybody wanted to be around my mother. Very talented. And I'm a blockhead. You know, I feel like Charlie Brown. I feel like Charlie Brown, you know. At 5 years old, I feel like Charlie Brown. And I also feel like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I got them two complexes going in my head at all times at 5 years old. And I'm a bedwetter. I wet my bed when I'm 5 to 12 or 13 years old. And I don't know why that happened, but it did. And I couldn't understand why it happened. And I just felt that low. And on top of that, I have a lazy eye. And during the 1970s, or late 60s and early 70s, they put eye patches on the good eye so you could possibly see out of the bad eye. Needless to say, I couldn't see. And so I got these things going on, you know, and I'm trying to fit in. And then I'm a blockhead, you know, and I'm not fitting in life, you know. They drop me off somewhere. I just think they drop me off. You know, both my parents have black hair, and I've got blonde hair. I don't know, but that's just a joke. I'm a middle child, so I got that going on, too. My brother left town when I was 16, or when I was about 6, and he's been gone ever since. Nobody seems to know where he's at. And it's really sad, and it tears my mother up every holiday. I just know it does. Every holiday, every birthday or whatever. Several years ago, I was in Florida, and my mom cooked this big, gigantic meal of mashed potatoes, gravy, biscuits, and chicken, and I ate just all I could. And I said, "Mom, thanks for the dinner." She goes, "You know, this would be a perfect dinner if your brother was here to finish it." And I think about that all the time. Because I call my mother on a weekly basis just to listen to her voice, just so she could listen to mine. And so, you know, I got these things going on. And at 13 years old, my mom decided to leave town because she wanted to leave town. And today I understand that. She defended her right to drink. And today I understand that. So she left town. My dad was given custody. It was uncontested divorce, and he was given custody of two kids, two teenagers, and I'm this blockhead. And my dad is doing the very best he could do, the very best he could do. And he worked hard and gave us good work values and good values and principles, and I'm this blockhead. I needed a drink, but I didn't take one. I graduated high school in 1981, and 3 days after I graduated high school, and I don't know if my dad said this, but here's what I heard. "Son, what service are you joining?" Now, I'm a blockhead, and I come from a family of the last name, and, you know, I've heard army stories out of the gazillions from my mom's side and my dad's side of the family for years. So I joined the Navy, and I'm in boot camp in Orlando, Florida, and I'm 18 years old, and my company commander looked at me, he whispered in my ear, he says, "I think you need to get drunk, or I think you need to get laid, and I don't know which one you need first or worst." I don't know how he figured all this out, but he did. God. So on November 23rd in 1981, I graduated boot camp, and I said I would never drink because I didn't want to be like my mother. And on November 23rd in 1981, I took my first drink at a zoo. It was SeaWorld in Orlando, Florida. And the ironic thing was, I ended my last drink in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at a zoo. Fort Lauderdale is a zoo. So I started this drinking. I for the first 15 seconds, I felt this your feeling of everything is going to be okay. I was restless, irritable, discontent. And for the first 15 seconds of this first drink, I felt okay. And I chased that feeling to the gate of death. I was in the Navy in 1981 through 1992, and during that period of time, there was a lot of people getting busted for drugs, so I was absolutely terrified to get busted for drugs, but I knew drinking was okay. And we drank. I was a boiler technician stationed in Charleston, South Carolina, worked in 120-degree temperature, 16, 18 hours a day, and we worked hard and we played harder. In order to fit in with those kind of people, you had to drink like they did, and we drank beer through a funnel. I went to more spring breaks when I was in the Navy than I ever thought about going to when I was in college. And we started drinking like this all the time. We would take the beer bong to the bars, and I didn't drink that long, but I drank hard enough and fast enough. And November of 1984, I buy this red Chevette, and I'm dating this young gal that was from Charleston, and she looked at me and she goes, "I think you got a drinking problem." I said, "I don't think so." A few weeks later, I'm in Cocoa Beach, Florida, visiting my family, and I walk out. Oh, I got to tell you something about the military. I never got the clap, but I sure in the hell practiced enough to accomplish that. I never got a tattoo either, but I will tell you about one experience that happened to me. I was in one of these foreign ports, and I was going to get my nickname was Papa Smurf. And I was going to get a tattoo of a Papa Smurf on my rear end. And I walk into this tattoo place of like 12:15, and they were closed for lunch. And I walk across the street to the House of Restitution. If you don't know what it is, talk to me after the meeting. And a blonde-headed, Spanish-looking Dolly Parton walked in, and now you know the rest of the story. At 20, that tattoo would have looked cute, but at 44, I don't think so. I've been to Europe twice, and I really can't tell you any experiences other than that. But I got this red Chevette in 1984, and December 24th, 1984, I'm visiting my family, and I go to this bar in Cocoa Beach, Florida, and I meet these two people outside this bar, and I got brilliant ideas when I meet people, you know. And they said, "Well, you know where we could get some women and some more liquor?" And I said, "Well, let's go." So we're driving down the road, and we get outside a remote area, and they said, "We got to use the restroom." And I said, "Okay." So we're using the restroom outside, just outside and anywhere, and they stick a gun to my chest. As they were driving off with my red Chevette in 1984, I prayed to God if He got me my Chevette back, I'd stop drinking. I've been sober most of that time since I made that statement. I still ain't got this Chevette back. A couple days later, I was drunk and couldn't figure out how come I was drunk. I had a near-death experience, and I swore off drinking forever. And a couple days later, I was drunk, and I couldn't figure out how come I was drunk. A few weeks later, I buy a white Chevette 5-speed. And I hate white, and I hate five doors and the whole nine yards. And 2 hours after I have this white Chevette, I burn up the clutch in a brand new car. It had 2 miles on it, and I burnt up the clutch. And that was the epiphany of my drinking career. Very unmanageable. And I move in with these. I eventually learned how to drive this car, and I move in with these guys that drink like I drank. We had a keg in the refrigerator, And it was just amazing. We had a lot of fun, for about 3 months. It was just amazing. So, May 25th of 1985, we go to this bar. It was the Flying Dutchman in Charleston, South Carolina. It was $5. Drink all you could drink from 8 to midnight. It was heaven. It was absolutely heaven. And we did this constantly, all night after night, but Tuesday night was the drink a drown night. And and it was no different than the other night, except for Mitch. Mitch looked like Steve Perry. And Mitch and I had a lot of fun with the women. I mean, we just absolutely had the fun, because he looked like Steve Perry and I had the personality. And I can't get nothing with my looks, but I got the personality. And that night, Mitch, we walked into the place, and Mitch says, "I'm leaving with that redhead." And I said, "You're crazy." Well, I ended up leaving with the redhead, and I ended up driving alone. And I'm going 85 miles out in a Chevette, and I passed two motorcycles at a hairpin turn that was 15 miles an hour. I've driven on this road sober a couple of years ago, and it is hellacious. I hit a ditch embankment. I fly 65 feet in the air, and I landed on one side of my ribs, cracked my ribs. Both my kidneys were lacerated. One was completely severed. My pancreas was lacerated. My liver was lacerated. I'm bleeding internally. My stomach was lacerated, and I had a collapsed lung. And no parent should ever live through this. And I put my parents through that. They made that call that their son isn't going to make it. And I'm laying on that gurney, and they can't treat you when you got that much liquor in you. My BAC was 0.28. And they cannot treat you. And I'm bleeding internally, and I'm crying. And somebody did, this is one reason why I love doing this, because I owe Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody come in and did a 12-step call, and he asked me if I have a drinking problem. I said, "I don't think so. Got a driving problem, but I ain't got no drinking problem." And I got introduced to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous after, I put my parents through the hell of their son not being able to make it. And I got introduced to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, not believing I was alcoholic. I was 21 years old, and I only drank for 3 years. And there was a lot of... I thought I had the world by the tail, and I was just beginning in my life. I had a couple of months left in the Navy, but they sent me to treatment, and I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on a Friday, and some old person looked at me. She was 35. She looks at me, she goes, "Dave, I know you pee in the shower." I don't know how she knew, but she knew. If you're new, we know. Just don't pee in my shower. That took my terminal uniqueness out. That absolutely took my terminal uniqueness out. Like I said, I wasn't totally convinced I was alcoholic. I had this reservation because I was 21 years old. And a year later, on May 25th of 1986, I made a conscious decision to go out to drink. And I'm living in Fort Lauderdale. I'm roofing at this time in Fort Lauderdale. And I'm dating this gal that was from NYU University. And she was on her summer vacation, and she was a psychology major. And I went and told my boss, "I'm dating this psychology major from NYU. And the psychology, Amy goes, "Well, my boss says, she has you for a summer experiment." I went and told Amy this on our next date, and Amy says, you know, it's going to take a lot longer in the summer for you. I drank for about three more weeks in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This was when Fort Lauderdale was amazing. It was a lot of fun. But I couldn't drink that much. I would drink a glass of beer, and I had to drink water. My body just could not handle a lot of liquor at any given moment. And so I drank for like that for about 3 weeks, or three or four weeks. And on June 21st, 1986, I'm on a date with Amy, and she decides to take a drink of alcohol, I decided to force feed her this drink, and the drink went all over her. And she gave me that god awful look, like, what is the matter with you? And I says, you know, I think I'm alcoholic. And I considered my innermost self, I was alcoholic in Confetti's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Longest day of the year. And I had a lot of serious events happen, a lot of serious miracles. I made a deal with a Navy recruiter. If he got me out of this, I would go back into the Navy. I had to get a medical waiver to get back in the Navy signed by Ronald Reagan. I wrote Ronald Reagan a letter, and 2 weeks later, I'm in the Navy. An absolute miracle. There's no explanation for it because the doctors are shaking their head. There's no way a guy with one kidney was able to reenlist. I am ever grateful that I was able to reenlist. I wonder if Ronald Reagan remembers signing that, but I'm grateful anyways. I would like to tell you that I conceded to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but that wasn't the case. The case was I was 22 years old, and I had these raging hormones, and I would go to meetings like this and participate when I could, but I had other alternatives. My other alternatives was to go in a bar, and I always went into a bar. I went in the bars many, many times, and I danced with many, many, many married women. And I left the bars with many, many married women over and over and over and over and over and over for 5 years. I was a fraud, and I knew it. I was absolutely fraud. I was restless, irritable, discontent. And what happened at 5 years sober, I started dating this really nice person, and I'm a good guy when I get what I want. And I was getting what I want, but when I didn't get what I wanted, I was a jerk. And at 5 years sober, I'm dating this really nice person. Now, this part of the story I like telling because I think it's funny today. But when I was living it, it wasn't funny. I start dating this nice person. I know you guys don't do this in L.A. Gardens, but this is what happened. Somewhere along the line in that previous lifetime, and that particular female, she was very pretty. She went from being a guy to a gal, and she's dating me at 5 years sober. And I got really confused, really baffled. And I went and seen a psychiatrist over this. And the psychiatrist informed me there was nothing the matter with my sexuality. And she also informed me that she goes, how come you ain't telling those folks in Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, I can't trust them. She goes, there's more going to meetings than going to meetings. And she goes, I suggest you try Alcoholics Anonymous like your life depends on it. And I'm going to tell you something. My life depended on it at 5 years sober. I got really busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got on the steering committees out of the yin-yang, you know. I got really busy. And I started hanging around with men to teach me how to be a man. I started hanging around with women that didn't hide in women's meetings to teach me how to be a gentleman. It was the women that saved my life. It was the women that saved my life. Because I know how to be a pig, but I don't know how to be a gentleman. And it was the women that saved my life. uh, I got on young people's committees, and we started throwing dances all over the state, and it was a lot of fun. I got really busy, really active, and my skin started to fit really well. Really well. And about that same time, I applied this wetsuit. And I got this wetsuit zipped up in the front. And the knee pads are in the back, and the crotch pads in the back, and this thing isn't fitting. And it's just a miserable time, man. And I'm walking around the beach like this for a couple of days. And somebody whispered in my ear, "Hey, dummy." Well, that's not what they said, but I'm going to clean up the language. The zipper goes in the back. Now, I didn't believe them. I went and changed the wetsuit in the bathroom. And I'll be gosh dang, it fit like a body glove. And there's a couple of things as I was going catching a wave. First of all, the thing was keeping me warm like it was supposed to. And the other thing is that if I was to follow the 12 steps and the 12 principles in all my affairs, everything in my life is going to be okay. Everything. 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 Either God is or God isn't. And God is to me. The other thing as I realize is you guys really don't know nothing. I don't either. But together we do. And I need Alcoholics Anonymous more today than I did when I first got here. So from that car accident, I was discharged from the Navy in 1992 with my last honorable discharge. And I want to speak about the men's for a minute. My father was a square. And I want to share this. There are two stories I want to share. Then I'm going to talk about what happened in 92. My father was a square, and he did the very best he could with this blockhead. And I was the one that was always giving him a hard time. When it came time to let him off the hook, I reflected back one story. We had a dog that died on the beach. He had heartworms, and my sister was out of town visiting my mom and at this time, and this dog had heartworms, and it died on my watch. And I'm driving back, and I get back home, and my dad is in the backyard digging a hole to bury the dog. And he had tears going down his eyes. And that's the kind of father he was. He was a doer. Didn't say a lot, but he was a doer. And I let him off the hook. And today we got a beautiful relationship. A beautiful relationship. My mother, I let her off the hook when I got to learn how to act like a gentleman in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because there's going to be some mother here, some sister, some niece, some young woman that's going to be very fragile, and there's going to be scoundrels weeping to get a hold of them. And it was the women that showed me all this stuff. So I let my mom off the hook, and today she's a very important part of my life. She made this beautiful tie for me. Proud of it. She makes a lot of my shirts, short sleeve shirts for me, and we have a beautiful relationship today. We wouldn't have had that if I wouldn't have gone through all that, and I definitely wouldn't have had that if I wouldn't have hung around some beautiful women throughout the years. And I've got a lot of great stories behind all those. But in 1992, I was discharged from the Navy for the last time, and I was I applied for benefits because I've got one kidney, and I was sent through a series of tests, and it was discovered that I had an acquired brain injury from that car wreck. And I went to the acquired brain injury program at Mesa College, and I went there for a semester and got to visualize some people that were worse off than me. Then I enrolled in a couple of classes, and I kept going, I kept going, and 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 I kept persistent. And this past May, I got to graduate San Diego State University with a bachelor's degree. Doesn't happen. It doesn't happen if I don't show up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to show up. But more importantly, I got to apply 12 steps and 12 principles out there. I've got 10 more minutes, and I got a couple more stories to tell you. At 20 years sober, I take a train ride all over the United States and Canada. And I got to go to Charleston to visit some of the places I drank at and some of the places I almost died at. And I got to go to the meetings I got sober at and got to see some of those people. And I got back and I was just ecstatic, man. And I went to a meeting that Sunday morning and I got back from this train trip and I'm just ecstatic. 2 seconds later, somebody sideswiped my car, my truck, and at 15 years old, my dad promised me a bicycle. And at 20 years sober, he bought this bicycle because, well, he said he was going to for my 20th day birthday, and I ended up losing this truck. And I started riding this bicycle everywhere, and I developed a double hernia. And I'm riding up and down these hills to San Diego State University with 20 or 30 pounds of books on my back. And I'm in a lot of pain. I can't sit down. I can't stand up. I can't exercise. It got so bad. I mean, it really got bad. And to make a long story short, my insurance agent got a hold of the he was limited to what he could do. The insurance agent. Not the company, but the agent and his office gave me a car for Christmas. And I looked at him. I said, "How can I repay you?" And he says, "Just help other people." How does an insurance agent give you a car for Christmas? In my early 20s, I owned a Camaro, and I always was getting tickets. And I haven't had a ticket in over 15 years. Now, tonight's not over with, but I haven't had a ticket. I'm the square that goes down the road 65 when it's 65. How does that happen? It's not because I don't want to get a ticket. It's because I want to live right-sized in my right skin. See, the longer I'm sober, the less I can get away with. If I rationalize, I want to read you something out of the big book. If I rationalize and justify, I didn't have to wear reading glasses when I got sober. I can't find it right now. When I rationalize and justify my actions in sobriety, I pay the price dearly for it. But when I do the right thing for the right reasons, you know, things tend to happen good. I don't do this alone.
I lost my train of thought because I couldn't find what I wanted to read. I've had a lot of great experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't do this alone. My disability counselor showed up for my party. A friend of mine threw me a party. And the disability counselor from Mesa College showed up, and she goes, "You're my hero." And I looked at her, and I said, "Really?" And that was somebody that... Now, here's what I want to read, and it's on page 70. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. This is talking about sex, but it could almost pertain to anything. Does this mean we were going to get drunk? Some people tell us so. But this is the only half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we have learned our lesson. If we were not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are the facts of our experience. It also says on page 64 that when we straighten out spiritually, the mental and physical aspect tend to subside. I'm going to close with this story. If you're new, there's a big banquet table. A big banquet table. It's full of chairs. Full of chairs. There's all kinds of food. There's laughter. These chairs are always rotating. There's always rotating. And there's always room for more. Always room for more. The other table, it's not out of sight. It's not even out of mind. There's one person there. It's four chairs, one person. The hideous four horsemen is sitting in that chair that's described on page 151 of the big book. The ideal is to want to get over to that big table, that banquet table. It's exciting. I've been there for many, many years. It's great. It's fantastic. But the key for me to be there is I have to reach over and help this other person get to this banquet table. Now, there's work that we got to do to stay at that banquet table. Unity, service, and recovery, they're all important. They're all important. And if you're new, don't feel guilty about leaving that hideous four horsemen back there. There's going to be somebody to take your place. And the key for you is to reach back to that hideous four horsemen and take that person to the banquet table. It's ever-changing. I want to close with one prayer. It's the Serenity Prayer. It means so much to me because I've had a lot of trials and tribulations in sobriety. You would not believe how many I've had. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Bill stole this prayer from this guy that wrote this. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as it did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that we'll make all things right if I surrender to His will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and surprisingly happy in Him forever in the next. Amen. Thank you.